The US advisor for African affairs says the Sudanese army and the paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces, have failed to formally accept a proposed humanitarian truce. Mediators from the United States, the UAE, Egypt and Saudi Arabia have been urging both sides to stop fighting as famine spreads and millions of people are displaced. Meanwhile, Amnesty International has released a report alleging that atrocities committed by the RSF in North Darfur are war crimes. Cameron Hudson is a senior fellow in the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I spoke with him earlier. Cameron, welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Thanks for having me.
What's your analysis here? Why do you think the RSF has announced this truce now, and how serious do you think it is?
Well, I think that it's not very serious at all. We know from today, as a matter of fact, that they have launched new attacks on army positions in the Kordofan region. So they've already violated the ceasefire that they agreed to unilaterally support. But I think that their reason behind it was much more of a kind of tactical ploy. Over the weekend, the Army General Burhan, who leads Sudan's armed forces, rejected the ceasefire proposal from the United States and vowed to fight on. And so I think it was an opportunity for the RSF to try to position themselves as the more reasonable party, the party ready for peace, the more responsible party in this conflict. But of course, that lasted, you know, barely 24 hours before they relaunched a new offensive.
Why do you think that General Burnham has rejected the plan so strongly?
Well, I think the proposal that was given to him by the United States on the part of the Quad, representing the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt, in his words, he felt was biased. And having seen the document, I can say that clearly the Emiratis had a hand in shaping this document. So there's a lot of loaded language in there that I think General Burhan was reacting to with respect to the document going well beyond just the terms of a ceasefire, but talking about elections, talking about reforming the army, dismantling parts of the army, all of which I think are probably going to be on the table for a future conversation, but felt very much like putting the cart before the horse. This idea that you've got to agree to a fundamental restructuring of the army while they're in the throes of a conflict for their own survival, I think struck many people as counterintuitive and counterproductive.
Is there any sign that the army might come under pressure to accept a ceasefire later, Cameron?
Well, I think the pressure will continue to mount. But again, I would say that there hasn't really been much pressure on the army or on the RSF, right? We have had, you know, members of the Trump administration urging the parties to agree to a ceasefire, but diplomatic calls for a ceasefire is not really pressure. Pressure would be threatening the use of sanctions, other diplomatic isolation tools, you know, designating them under the Foreign Terrorist Act of the United States, you know, things like that that have real teeth. Those could be pressure points. But diplomatic calls for a ceasefire doesn't create, I think, any pressure on the part of the two belligerents, which is why we really haven't seen them move towards any kind of real ceasefire thus far.
On Radio National Breakfast, I'm talking to Cameron Hudson, senior fellow in the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and we're looking at what's happening in Sudan. Cameron, what do we know about the humanitarian situation on the ground, especially after the RSF's bloody takeover of El-Fasher?
Yeah, so it's clearly the most grave humanitarian situation in the world today, the farthest reaching, the greatest impact. 14 million people in a country of 15 million people are displaced from their homes, many of them displaced internally, but over 4 million crossing international borders seeking refuge. And the situation in El-Fasher is a bit of a microcosm of the whole country. Last year, the city of El-Fasher had about a million people. Most of those people, three quarters of them, were in internally displaced people's camps that were created during the last Darfur genocide 20 years ago. Today, there's roughly 100,000 people left in El-Fasher. So over the course of the year, you've seen 900,000 people flee the city. And just in the last, 3 weeks since the city fell, it went from 250,000 people down to this figure of 100,000. The problem is, of course, that only about 70,000 of those people have been accounted for. Only about 70,000 have made it to the closest nearby city in Tooele and been received by international aid organizations there. So you're looking at over 150,000 people that cannot be accounted for since the fall of al-Fashir.
What's the access for aid agencies trying to get some kind of help into there at the moment, Cameron?
I mean, there's virtually no aid access in there, certainly none going into al-Fashir right now. And that has been the case for the better part of 18 months. The Rapid Support Forces essentially put a cordon around the city, not allowing any food to get in. So the people that were surviving in al-Fashir were just barely surviving. Most of them were experiencing famine conditions and so have been without aid for the entirety of the siege of the city. This holds true for most parts of the country that are under RSF control right now. They have denied food aid and food access. If you look at the eastern part of the country, the part of the country that the army controls, that has moved into a much more manageable situation for humanitarian aid. There is much more free-flowing aid into areas under army control. It's really the areas that the Rapid Support Forces controls that are not getting any food assistance right now.
What does the RSF want, Cameron?
Well, they want legitimacy. They want a seat at any kind of governing table. I think they want to avoid responsibility and accountability for the crimes that they have committed. What they say, however, is that they want to dismantle the state. They want to dismantle a state which they believed was biased against them because they were not kind of from the riverine elite. The RSF is made up of a lot of minority Arab tribes from outside the political center of the country. And so this is really a kind of outside-in attack to dismantle the roots of the state by the RSF and to build something new in its place.
Cameron Hudson, thank you very much.
Thank you.